Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So to not have a job took the wind out of me, and I got very depressed.
Hello, this is Christopher Triumph, and you are listening to Varvet International. If you're a long-time listener, you might have noticed that the podcast has been on a break for some time. This is due to some personal issues. I'm sorry to have kept you waiting. Now, however, I'm releasing all four of the interviews I had canned, so you can binge listen to all of them if you like. My guest in this episode is stand-up comedian Sarah Schaefer. Sarah grew up in Midlothian, Virginia. I hope I pronounced Midlothian right. When Sarah was 23 years old, she moved to New York City, where she started to work professionally with comedy. Since that, Sarah has been writing, producing, and performing comedy. You might have seen her in the show Nikki and Sarah Live on MTV, or, for instance, in Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. Well, enough talking. Here's the interview recorded in Los Angeles, where Sarah lives since a couple of years back. Roll the tape, please.
How's your day been so far?
It's been great so far.
Yeah?
Is this early for you? It took me a while. No, I get up really early. I get up at like 5:45.
Why?
I like to run and walk, but I don't like to do it when the sun is up high because it's too hot. And if I get up that early, it hasn't come up over the mountains yet, so I'm in the shade when I'm running.
So you do Runyon Canyon?
No, I live in Silver Lake, and there's a big reservoir, and they have a running path all around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
run around there either once or twice depending on the day.
Okay. How many laps did you do today?
Today I did none. Okay. I decided to sleep in a little. I was feeling very tired. I did not sleep well last night.
I've been here for almost 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Still jet lagged.
Even just for me, if I go East Coast to West Coast, you never fully feel normal. I mean, it takes months to feel normal.
That sucks. Yeah. Are you on antidepressants?
No.
Since I started doing that, it fucked up everything. My family is sort of, they are like 1 week in, they're full normal.
No, I could see that being, you know, for me, sleep is like essential to my life. And if it's being messed with in any way, I'm not a happy camper.
No. Same here. What are you working on currently?
I am shooting a pilot presentation for IFC, which is, I don't know if y'all have IFC, but it is comedy-centric network here in the States, and I'm working on a show that's sort of in the realm of The Daily Show, a news satire program fronted by like an ensemble of women, so including me. I'm the leader of the pack. So that's what we're actually shooting it tomorrow and Friday. So I've been working on it for over a year, but we're now finally to the day where it's going to shoot something, and then IFC decides if they want to pick it up to series, and then hopefully they'll love it. So far, they've been incredibly supportive. They have a lot of shows that are really out there, and they clearly let comedians just do what they do.
Yeah.
So when we were pitching this idea around to all the different networks, there was some interest from other networks, but when I heard that IFC wanted to work with us, I was like, absolutely with them, because I know from their other programming that they're going to let me do what I want to do. And they have been very supportive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you talking about Comedy Bang Bang, for instance?
Yes. Comedy Bang Bang is one of their best shows. I mean, all their shows are great, but actually the director of Comedy Bang Bang is directing this presentation. So he's bringing some of that. He's injecting a little bit of weirdness into it, which I love, and giving it its own unique kind of feel, which I'm excited about.
What's his name?
Stony Sharp.
Okay.
He's done, if you go to his website, you just Google his name, because I don't think it's like stonysharp.com or anything. It's some other site, but he has all these clips on there and stuff he's done. And there, he did a thing for Adult Swim on Cartoon Network, which is like live action cats and dogs, like in a gangster, like almost like a Reservoir Dogs type show but with real dogs and cats. He's like shot like scenes with dogs and cats with machine guns, and like it's so crazy, but if you look it up, it's really funny.
It sounds great.
I don't remember what it's called though.
All right.
But he's a cool guy.
I was thinking walking here, because you're not from here, right?
No, I'm not from here.
How LA are you?
I think I've fully embedded myself into LA culture immediately, but probably not the type of LA culture that most people think of when they think of LA, because we are probably, I thought LA was like, oh, it's just beautiful, vapid people, actresses, you know, the Hollywood, like, glam, everybody's drinking juices and eating kale, and like, that stuff is true.
Yeah.
That stereotype is true, but
I bought a bottle of water yesterday for $6.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good deal.
It was alkaline or something.
Oh,
like
well,
that.
That's, yeah. You know, I'm sure you're feeling really great today.
I am.
But I have found that, you know, I guess it depends on the neighborhood you live in and the people you hang out with, but I have found the lifestyle here to fit really well with me. I grew up in Virginia on the East Coast, which is the suburbs. It's Southern culture and car culture. So, you know, everyone had cars, but you were driving to your Walmart and your mall and the fast food restaurants. And that was the kind of upbringing I had. And then I lived in New York for like 13 years in New York City. And that was just such an extreme environment. And everything is difficult when you live there, you know, just to go get your laundry done, run an errand. You know, when you leave for the day, it's like you're going on a 10-mile mountain hiking trip. You're like, okay, I've got everything packed up and ready to go. And it's just it's a harsh environment, New York City is. And it was exciting, but after a while, I was just like, I'm tired. And when I moved here, I found that this LA is a very great cross between comfortable, laid-back, suburban living with the urban culture, restaurants, art. The art scene here is amazing. Mm. You can live more comfortably. The apartment I have is almost triple the size of the apartment I had in Brooklyn. It has all the things I would want. I have a garden. You know, it's just a little bit. It's a lot more comfortable.
Mm.
And I feel very creative here because I'm more comfortable.
A few trips back, I stayed in Silver Lake. I really liked it.
Yeah, I love it. It's a good vibe. It's like, it's a cool neighborhood. And in Brooklyn and New York where I lived, I could never afford to live in the cool neighborhood. I had to live like two neighborhoods over.
Yeah.
Like in sort of Brooklyn is pretty cool overall, but
what was the goal sort of? Was it Williamsburg?
I think Williamsburg, yeah. And Park Slope is the more older, you know, family type cool neighborhood. There's the cool neighborhoods, but I could never afford to live in those prime neighborhoods. So here it was like, I'm going to live in the cool neighborhood. And I was able, got lucky on an apartment, and it's been great. I mean, there's other challenges in LA. I never thought I would say that the weather here can be very bleak, in that, which I know bleak can mean a lot of things. And like somewhere that's rainy or cloudy all the time is its own type of bleak. But here it's like when it's the same every day, you tend to get, I don't know, there's something depressing about that in a weird way. It's because you never have any change. And I'm someone who, the seasons and, oh, is it going to rain today? That creates spontaneity in my life and I have to adjust. And here it's like, well, I should probably bring my sunglasses.
You know? But you don't seem like a person that spends too much time in the sun.
Oh, no.
No.
No, I actually, when I moved here, I was so afraid. I'm very like, I don't want sunburn, or I have sunburn right now. It's barely. I have like a triangle right here from the shirt. I don't like getting sun, and I've always been very like hat. And when I go to the beach, I try to get a tent, a whole tent that I can get underneath. Yeah, yeah. So when I moved here, I was like, well, it's the California sun. I have to protect myself. And I was like putting suntan lotion on every time I left the house. And I ended up getting a vitamin D deficiency.
Oh, okay. In LA.
In LA, yeah.
Fantastic.
And I was like depressed.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, I mean, there's no doctor told me that that's exactly what happened, but I know those things can be connected. I could have had seasonal affective disorder in Southern California, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But the doctor was like, you can have 15 minutes of sun a day. Like, don't worry, you're going to be okay. And I was like, okay.
But I mean, why go to the beach if you want to be in a tent? I saw tents all over.
Oh yeah,
Venice. They bring them.
Well, I don't go to the beach that much here because I'm spoiled. I'm from Virginia, and my family would go to the beaches in North Carolina. Are so amazing. Really soft sand, not overly crowded, clean. The waves are, it's perfect for swimming, and it's not too rough. The water is warm in the summer, and we go every year. And we started bringing down a tent because there were babies, you know, like my sisters and have babies, and it was just easier to deal with them under some shade. And so I was like, oh, I like it under here. And I'm like, I need a tent every time I go to the beach.
Okay. Yeah.
Because you don't get too hot.
No.
You can just, but I love the beat. I love the sound. I love the smells. I love the relaxation.
Yeah.
Pop open a beer at 9 a.m. It's just that beach lifestyle, you know?
I actually wrote sort of a joke about your background here. I'm going to
say it now.
Yeah. You are the first person I've met who's open about being from Virginia. Yeah.
Well, you know, Virginia is an interesting place. It's definitely, I mean, the part I'm from, some people don't think, because, you know, in America, the Southern culture is very, we make fun of it a lot. They deserve a lot of it, but there is a lot to love about it. And Virginia is on the northern part of the South. Mm. And some people will go, oh, you're from Virginia. That's not really Southern. And I don't have much of a Southern accent, but, and I'll say, well, where I was from in Virginia, it was pretty Southern. We had I was Southern Baptist, a hardcore Christian upbringing, and I had those pieces of that culture in me. But yeah, there's definitely some stuff from our past that we probably should deal with.
Yeah. Is it even okay to use the term redneck?
Yeah, it's okay with me.
Yeah.
Redneck is, I guess, it's a jovial term in some ways, like, oh, look at that redneck. But then it can also imply some darker things like racist or ignorant or stupid, and people get sensitive about that. But
that being said, would you say that Virginia is sort of a redneck state?
A little bit, yeah. Parts of it, for sure. The northern part of Virginia is Washington, D.C., and it's much more worldly because, you know, the world comes there. You know, there's diplomats and there's politics, and so it doesn't have that much of a southern culture. But I was from Richmond, which was the capital of the American Confederacy, and it was definitely a hotbed of redneck activity for many, many years.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is because I've met rednecks like that fit that description from all over the United States. You know, my boyfriend is from Washington, Spokane, Washington, on the West Coast in Idaho, and like that is very rednecky.
Okay,
you know, like there're some real characters up there. Like, I think, I don't know what, I want you to describe what a redneck looks like.
I'm not sure. You know, I haven't traveled that much in the U.S. So it's, when I think rednecks, I think like, it's like
missing some teeth.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
probably wearing a sweatshirt with some deer on it.
Or perhaps a southern what's
Confederate
that?
Flag. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's that kind of redneck. I think, you know, there's, if you're ever in America and you want to see a redneck, just go to a Walmart.
Okay.
In any city, yeah. And you'll find some there.
Right. I was at Target yesterday. Is that sort of the thinking man's Walmart?
Yes, it is. It's okay. The thinking man's Walmart. And well, that's one of the things I love about now not living in New York City, because Target in New York City was a war zone.
Okay.
I mean, people were starved of that kind of shopping. And so when you went to Target, nothing was on the shelves. The lines were crazy. People are like foaming at the mouth, like trying to get stuff. And it was just craziness. Whereas here you go into a Target and it's organized. It's cool. It's clean. There's no one in line. It's wonderful.
Yeah. When will you know about the pilot?
I don't know exactly. We have to, you know, once we shoot it, then we're going to be doing an editing for a few weeks at least. And then we turn it in probably early, mid-September. And hopefully they won't take very long to make a decision. But just from past experience, I know that can take months. I don't know how it all works. Each network is different. And sometimes they'll be like, oh, we're going to get back to you in a week. And then 6 months later, you're like, hello, can I get on with my life?
You know?
There's a lot of unknowns in this business. And every time I'll joke, I'll be like, oh, it'll be 2016 before I hear about that. And that's really happening. Like I always joke about it. And now I'm getting I have to keep making that joke longer. Like, oh, it'll be 2020 before I know about that one thing. And then that way I know there's no way that's going to happen. But I keep getting proven wrong.
I hate to say it, but I'm in the same position in Sweden.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's even, I mean, here, the networks have some competition here. That's not the case really in Sweden.
Right.
So there are like two networks.
Is it similar to how BBC in the UK, they've got a very concentrated...
Yeah, probably, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the government sort of...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
goddamn socialists.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very strong.
I love it.
You do.
Yeah, probably a socialist.
Who's your 2016 president?
Oh, you know, I don't know. It's really, I've been a little disappointed on the Democratic side that there haven't been more people coming, you know, trying to make a bid for it.
Why is not Bernie Sanders your man?
He might be. I'm going to wait and see I want to see Hillary and him debate. I want to see them go head to head. Also, part of me really just wants a woman to be president.
That would be super.
So that's going to be something that it's going to influence me. And I know some people are like, well, what if she's not the best candidate? And it's like, do we really know? Until they're in there, do we really know? But she also does have a lot of experience with foreign diplomacy. And she's been in that biz for a long time. And some people think that's a bad thing. But part of me is like, she knows Washington.
But someone said that she's a little bit too in cahoots with sort of the bank or...
Yeah, when you've been in Washington that long, I mean, I can't imagine the shady dealings going on. I mean, I don't know if she's doing things that are illegal, but, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch my back, that kind of stuff. I mean, it sucks because I think we Americans, a lot of us are just resigned to the fact that like corporations are running the show behind the scenes and the super PACs and all of these massive special interests that seem to control things that I think the majority of Americans, like our gun problem, for instance, you know, the majority of Americans, like, we need to do something. This is out of control. This, you know, we're upset about this, please. And there's a very small faction of a very powerful gun lobby that is making it so difficult to make a change.
Yeah.
That's a small group of people that have a lot of power, and that's the opposite of what the democracy is supposed to be. So we can change that, and that you change that by, I mean, I get upset with people who go, oh, well, the voting doesn't matter. You'll hear a lot of Americans say that. No, voting doesn't matter. It doesn't. My vote doesn't make a difference. And I say, well, what election are you talking about? Presidential? No, yeah. Like, local elections are the most important thing you can do, because that's at the bottom, and that's how it starts. You know, the people running for president started in local politics. And so when you put in good people local and you make good local policy, that will eventually get to Washington.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But I get upset when people, I'm like, do you vote in local elections? And they're like, no. And I'm like, ah! That's actually how you make a difference.
Yeah. Like,
But it takes work. It takes research. You have to, you know, it's exhausting. I'm still figuring out how to vote in California. You know, I don't know the players. I don't know the issues. I don't know where to vote. You know, I'm like figuring out all of that. It's not easy.
It says like on your web page that you are currently living in LA.
Yes.
It feels like you're about to move. But are you about to move or does it feel like home?
It's starting to feel like home, for sure. I definitely see myself staying here for a long time, but you never know. And I have another TV show in development right now, a scripted show that's based in New York. It would be set in New York. So if that was to go forward, I've had this fantasy of like, oh, I'll just live in New York for 3 months of the year. And it'll be from September to December, my favorite time in New York. And then I've like already got it planned out in my head. And then I'll be in LA for the rest of the year. Like, I love the idea of being bi-coastal.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Oh, I'm working on it.
Yeah. And that's also been pilot being shot? Or
not yet. We've written a script for it. It's based on my web series that I put out last year called
Work.
Day Job.
Day
yeah,
job.
Work. Close. But it's interesting. It's an interesting new world that I've, because I've done talk show type stuff and stand-up comedy type stuff. But I've never done a scripted show project before, and that world is new to me and been very exciting. And, you know, I made that web series. I invested my own money to make it look really nice. And
it did.
And I thought it turned out really well. And, you know, just thinking it would be a calling card, a sort of like, hey, I can do scripted. Or it's just to show you an impression of me on camera not doing like, yuckity, yuckity. Like, this is me doing something a little more subtle and sad, almost sad a little bit, and just different side of me, and thinking that that would just sort of open the door for something down the line, didn't not realizing that someone would see that and go, oh, that could be a TV show, and we want to work with you, and a production company paid me to option the project and paid me to write a script with someone, and like I've recouped the money already on it, and it may never even see the light of day. It may never go anywhere, but I'm like, oh, this is a business that, like, you can, it's kind of weird. You could make a living without anyone ever knowing who you are.
Yeah. I interviewed Jeff Garlin, and he said that most of it, because he's a quite wealthy man.
Yeah.
And he says most of it comes from pilots.
Yeah,
really.
Things that never go anywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I was like, I need to start making some more web series.
Yeah.
This is a great investment.
Yeah, yeah.
Put 10 grand in, get, you know, quadruple your money, get it back.
Was that what you...
I spent, on the web series, I spent $11,000.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
We did when I was at MTV, Nikki, my co-host of the show that I had, we did a commercial for MTV. It was like a MTV branded commercial for Kia, the car company.
Yeah.
And they paid us money for that, and I used some of that money to make this web series. I was like, I'm just going to go ahead and reinvest that.
Oh, wow.
And it worked out.
Fantastic.
I made my money back.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Hopefully it'll keep going.
It's a very cool, I mean, you seem sort of like, because I was going to ask you about if you have reached your full potential.
Oh, no.
Exactly. I thought you would say that.
Yeah.
And what's in the way of achieving it?
Me? I'm in the way. I've really, this past year has been it has not been what I expected at all. I had the show on MTV, which was an incredible opportunity for me. I really, before that, thought I may never make it the way I want to make it. I'll be part of this business, but I'll never be on camera. I'll never have my own TV show, but I'll be close. I'll write, or I'll, you know, and I was excited about that. I was really okay with it, but circumstances led to getting this show on MTV, and it felt like a miracle, but also I could see the steps I had taken and the choices I had made that led me to that, and the work I'd put in that led me to that. But when it got canceled and I moved out to LA, I had plans, you know, I'll sell another show or I'll get cast in a role in a show. And those things were very slow coming at first. And there was a year of really just sitting around, and I'm a worker. I love jobs. I've had jobs my whole life.
Yeah.
And so to not have a job was really took the wind out of me, and I got very depressed, and And now I've been in therapy working on realizing I didn't realize I have like severe anxiety. I didn't even know that's what it was.
Okay.
I just thought I was in my head thinking all day and realizing, oh, I've gotten myself in a whipped up into a frenzy just in here, in my brain. Nothing, just I'll see a tweet of somebody and just I'll suddenly be going down a rabbit hole of like, well, why does she have that? Or why didn't I get asked to do that? And then it becomes this whole distorted thinking nightmare.
Yeah.
And I've
very relatable.
Yeah. Finally have been starting to dismantle that. It's just a habit. It's just a bad habit that I have. And it's been really hard. Like right now I'm very stressed about this pilot for IFC. And I realized I'm deep into the distorted thinking right now. Like in a moment yesterday, I was like, I don't even know that I'm doing it. But now I have the tools to recognize that I'm playing this game with myself in my head where I'm blowing things up into much bigger problems than they are. You know, in the moment, that's what I've been learning is like, you feel an emotion and just feel that emotion for what it is.
Mm.
I'm disappointed right now, but it'll be okay. Instead of I'm disappointed and then the world is going to come, everything is going to go wrong and then they're going to hate me and I'm going to be a loser and nobody likes me and what is wrong with me? And it becomes this huge thing when really it was just like, oh, I just was disappointed that they didn't like that one thing I wrote, but it's okay because I can write something else.
And probably they liked everything else.
Oh, 99% of it. And then they go like, this is amazing. Could you change this one thing? And I'm like, oh, well, I'm not good enough. Who do I think I am?
Yeah.
Everyone's going to laugh at me, but not in the way I want. So I've been really, to answer your question, sorry, that was a big digression, but I get in the way of my potential because I convinced myself that overly thinking about something was how I solved it. And like, oh, I've got to really analyze this thing and just stick on it for a long time in my brain. Realize, and then an hour has gone by and I haven't written anything. And I've just been stirring up dirt in my head instead of actually.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Like producing something and focusing on what I can create and my voice. And I think those are the things that hold me back. The moment I can break through those moments, because when I'm doing my best work is when I'm not thinking and I'm just doing.
Yeah.
And I'm in the moment having fun, feeling joy coming through me. And that's how it's the best. And so I want to learn how to channel that more easily and not get myself bogged down and worry.
I heard you talk about could you help me with this one?
Transcendental meditation?
Thank you. I heard you talk about that with Pete Holmes.
Oh, yeah.
Have you tried it?
No, I actually never, because it's expensive.
Okay.
To learn how to do it. I think it's now like up to $1,500.
Oh, wow.
$2,000 to learn it for like 1 week. It's crazy.
That's fuck off expensive. But
I have learned not that exact method, but I have learned meditation-like principles, and you know, a lot of it is just breathing and clearing your mind. And my boyfriend does transcendental meditation.
Okay.
And I was like, "Well, can you teach me?" And he goes, "No, because you will learn what I have." I guess you, each person, it's unique to them the way you do it.
Mm.
And so he's like, "You will learn the way I do it, which may not be best for you."
I interviewed David Koechner yesterday. Mm-hmm. He told me that he writes in the morning. He goes up really early, just like mm-hmm. you and I, and he writes 750 words. Sort of.
That's manageable.
And I didn't really understand. It felt like he has to get to 750. And so he sort of perhaps writes the same word over and over again at the end. But that's okay, because then he will sort of have a task of what to do in the day or something like that.
It's almost like it jump starts your brain to be like, okay, now you're through the initial. Because sometimes for me, writing is just so hard to start.
Yes.
And that's what writer's block is for me, just to start. But once you start, it flows. And it's like in the beginning, it's like pushing through. That's what it feels like. Like I'm just trying to push through something very thick and it's hard. And then once you break through, then it's like flowing, free flowing, and you're on a roll. And then, oh, 4 hours. I only wanted to write for, I'll tell myself, you 30 minutes. You have to write for 30 minutes. And then I'll look up and it's been 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it works. But I oftentimes have to go somewhere different. I have to change my physical location to start that process. So I'll go to a coffee shop. And I could be doing it at home, but it's just that I came here for a purpose. And I'm not going to sit here and just stare at the wall. I'm here, and there's a limited time that I'm going to be here, and I need to make it worth it.
I heard about some, like a French author or philosopher or something, who actually, like in the 1900s, he took on his coat and his hat and his, what do you call it? He took mm-hmm. his like cane or umbrella mm-hmm. and he walked around the block, and then he came in and then he started working.
Yeah, that's been a big thing I've learned in therapy, is when I start going down the drain, that's what to me it feels like. I'm going down a drain of negative thinking. Sometimes I will just go, and just so that the thought stops.
Yeah.
And then it helps to get up and move and get different. She was telling me, like, just a different smell. Like, if I go outside and smell a different smell, it's like a new experience in my brain, and I'm not on that negative thinking anymore.
How is that reservoir running?
Been everything. Yeah. I mean, I started, since moving to LA, I've been into running for a few years now and done different races, half marathon, 5Ks, 10Ks, whatever. I'm not very fast. I'm not very athletic, but it's just, I like it because it's just me against me. There's no competition. I'm not letting anyone down if I don't run fast, you know. So I've really gotten into it, but LA has been challenging because of the heat. I just don't like running when it's hot, and it's hot here most of the year during the day. And I was just trying to figure out how to make it work for me. So finally, starting about 2 months ago, I just made a commitment to get up before the sun came up and be ready to run as soon as the sunrise is happening. And something unexpected happened, because I just thought it was just going to be just so I could get my exercise in. But that early in the morning, it's the world hasn't started yet. I mean, East Coast has started, but I have to kind of stay off my phone a little bit. But in LA, the world hasn't started yet, and there's very few people out there. And I've realized I have to change my path because no one has run there yet, and I get spider webs all over me.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm like, I just can't, it just freaks me out. So I had to go a different way or whatever. But to be out there so early, it was like, because the world hadn't started yet, neither did my brain. And so it's like I'm just very clear, and I just have a moment of an hour where I'm not obsessing over something, and it has changed my whole day. And the days that I, like today, I did not do that, I already feel a little like heavy, you know.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah,
so yeah, it's been great.
I'm not going to say that I can totally understand what you've gone through with that sort of trail of thoughts and mm-hmm. so forth, but I had sort of problems with shame that mm-hmm. I sort of tried to find stuff that I was ashamed of, and I had to go way, way back. I had mm-hmm. to go like back to my teenage years when I shoplifted or whatever mm-hmm. to sort of really like go into that. But mm-hmm. I would say that it's sort of a sign of depression or something like that, mm-hmm. that I sort of dwell on that. And I went to a therapist, and he said, well, if you do obsess with that kind of thinking, try this. Don't think about it.
Yeah, that it's the myth of my thoughts control me.
Yeah.
And they mean something.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's a lie. They don't mean anything. Mine is getting obsessed with, there's like 10 distorted thinking patterns, and I do all of them. But one of the big ones for me is deciding if I'm good or bad, and that debate. Well, I'm that person did something bad, and I wouldn't do that, and that makes me good. Or, oh my God, I should apologize for that thing that I did. And I mean, it's the minor, all this just minutia of life, and I'm turning it into the epic battle of good and evil in my head.
Yeah.
And she's just like, you're both. Everybody is both. Mm. You're both good and bad, and you'll never find the answer. You will never figure out if you're good or bad. It is a waste.
Yeah.
It is such a waste. And it's been amazing. It's a cognitive behavioral therapist. And so she's more about not digging, but just understanding your thought processes and your habits. She just always talks about, this is a behavior that you're doing. It's not who you are. It's just something that you've been engaging in, and it's a habit you have.
Do you think that has to do with, because you have sort of a Christian background, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Can that be part of it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I latched on to the good stuff, I think, in my religious experience, but was very upset by how there could be bad people in my church. You know, I was like, well, how is that possible? Like, we're supposed to be good people. And, you know, and I got very disillusioned after when I probably went to college and realized, like, it's just not as clear cut as I wanted. I want things to be very black and white. I want things to be yes or no, good or bad. And realized, oh, this is all very complicated and I can't make sense of it. And I thought I had answers. And for me, and I still am this way. It's just love. We just need to love each other. If you would just realize that you're lovable and I'm lovable and love is the answer. I'm very focused on like love, and I get very sad. I get very sad when there's just hateful people in the world just spewing hatred. And I'm just like, who hurt you? You know, like who made you hate the, you know, like love is such an easier tool. Like it's so much easier in my mind, but I guess it's not for some people.
I also heard you talk about, also with Pete Holmes, I heard you talk about relations, and I'm thinking, do you believe in, is this a word in English, but do you believe in twosomeness?
What is that? Well, I love that. I just like the sound of it already.
I found a better word, I think. Two-ness.
Two-ness.
Is that a word?
No.
Okay.
Like soulmates?
Yeah, that two people are supposed
meant to be together.
Exactly.
No. I don't believe it. I think that's a lie, a little, maybe not a lie, but it's a grandiose thing that we're taught, especially girls, are taught by movies and TV, that there's the one, you know, you're going to find the one, and then you're meant to be together. And all of this, I mean, I don't know how it is where you're from, but there's a huge focus on weddings and your wedding, and now it's gotten out of control. It's like this viral video of a man proposing to his wife will melt your heart. You know, and it's like everyone's trying to top each other. And it's like, we're more in love than you are. We're more meant to be together than you are. And I just think that that whole fairy tale thing really screwed me up, because I thought at 19, I had met the one. And didn't realize that, like, you change a lot in your 20s, and maybe that person no longer is the one. And that isn't something that we are taught could happen. You're supposed to grow together and always be together no matter what, because you are connected in the soul. And it's like, well, that just didn't pan out for me. And I'm with someone now that I don't want to break up with, and I love him very much, and I do see us being together for a long time. We work really well together, but I'm also not obsessed with the idea that we can't not be together, you know, that we have to stay together no matter what happens. And it's like, you don't know what's going to happen in your life, you know, like things change and circumstances change and your needs change. And it's interesting how that knowledge has actually made me better in a relationship. Mm. That knowing that this could end makes me try harder to make it count, you know, and to, I think when you, there's something about saying like, I do, and I'll be here forever, no matter what. It's like, well, then I'm just going to lay back and be a total asshole. Because you can't leave me. And I've always thought that that's, you know, like, till death do us part. It's like, my only way out of this is if I die, well, I can do whatever I want. Yeah. You know, I don't think that that's, it's just one way of looking at it. But yeah, I think that when I was in marriage counseling and my marriage was falling apart, one of the things they said to us was, if you decide to break up and you decide to get divorced, you will fall in love very quickly again. It will surprise you. And I mean, they were like, no holds barred. I mean, they were very blunt. And I was like, oh, really? I like, got all excited.
Yeah.
I knew that that was a sign. Like when you're like, oh, awesome. Okay, I'm going to go do that. And I didn't necessarily want to fall in love again. I just wanted to be free and single.
Yeah.
And it did. Within a year and a half, I met my new boyfriend. So I think that it was, that's a harsh thing to hear if you've been someone who's believed in this myth of like, well, there's only one person and I'm going to find him. How did we find each other? Oh, wow. You know, when people make this big deal about it, it's like, well, because you went to college together and you were near each other and then you saw each other. And
yeah.
But if you had gone to college somewhere else, you would have met someone there. It's not like that guy. It's like, not like you would have been alone forever.
Because it feels like people, at least in Sweden, people born in the 80s and 90s, they sort of, I'm not sure that they're going to be even like faithful to each other. And I'm sort of doing quote unquote signs here. That perhaps open relations will be the way that standard in the future. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I think that's a constant, like, I wonder if every generation thinks that about the one, but next one, like, oh, they're going to be just a bunch of sluts, you know, like, but it's like, I don't know. I feel like, you know,
well, I still hope so for them in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I think my advice to anyone younger is to a young girl, to a teenager is like, live your life. Like, don't settle for a while. Like, make sure you meet lots of different people. Make sure you know what you want before you make some sort of grandiose commitment. But sometimes I'd also know people that have been with their high school sweetheart forever and they're very happy and they're like clearly just really great together. And that works. They know who they are. And some people have a sort of like, I know who I am from very early on in their life and that can work for them. Who cares? Yeah. But I just would say also on the other swing end of it, like speaking of swinging, don't necessarily think that you would have to be in an open relationship. Because I think there's some people who really will drive that, like, well, that's what we're meant. That's what we're meant to be. Because, you know, actually, genetically speaking, in evolution, we, you know, we're supposed to want different partners and blah, blah, blah. We're animals, and, you know, all this stuff. And I hear that sometimes, like, well, if that doesn't work for you, though, you don't have to be in a monogamous relationship with one. I mean, you don't have to be in an open relationship if you don't want one. I've been in one and it didn't work for me. So I don't think that's for me. So I would just say to younger people, like, just try different things. Try that.
Yeah.
See if it works for you. I think we'll see more people in open relationships, but I think there'll be plenty of people who are like, I didn't like that. It was very weird.
Yeah. It sort of feels like we're basically the same age. I'm not sure that you had that, but we were sort of raised in the age where AIDS was sort of like, if you fuck someone, you're going to die.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely was scared. I mean, when you add that plus the amount of shame, I mean, I feel like Americans have so much whacked out shame over sex, but we're so, like, our advertising and our TV is just sex, sex, sex. But then we're like, oh, that's horrible. You had sex when you were a teenager? Like, you know, it's like, really a messed up, like, really screwed up double standard and message. And I think that, like, if we just would chill out about it a little, like, in that fear of, like, but there's so much pressure. I mean, I felt this as a teenager, that if you have sex, you're a whore, but you better be cool. Like, be cool. Like, do that. Like, be a cool girl. Yeah. Like, the guys would make me, like, you're such a prude. Like, you would get made fun of if you weren't sexual. And I was like, well, what am I supposed to do? And I didn't end up having sex until I was in college.
Yeah.
Because it just, the whole thing made me very uncomfortable.
I understand that. I ended up not having sex until the age of 18 because nobody wanted to. Yeah.
Well, that's a great reason.
Well, Yeah.
I didn't even want to kiss anybody until, I mean, I was just like, so, like, ew, get off. I was still like a little kid, like, ew, get off of me.
Yeah.
Gross. It just was, I wasn't ready.
Did you have a middle class upbringing?
Yeah. Well, I had a sort of weird, we were pretty wealthy.
Okay.
At first. And then my dad got into all this financial trouble, and then we weren't. We were more lower middle class. But I've never been poor. My parents were very poor growing up, so I've heard stories from them, and just I think that the way they raised me, they made a lot of mistakes that I've now become incredibly afraid of making. So that's part of my thing is like, I'm not going to be him. You know, it's like I get obsessed with that.
What does that mean?
I don't want to get too much into it, but my dad just made some very poor choices.
Yeah.
And he made selfish choices that didn't, you know, and even to this day, I don't think he understands fully how it affected us. Okay. And then I think my parents were bad with money, but they were really adventurous, spontaneous people who believed we could do anything. And that is the good thing that I got from them, which is like, because I've driven myself into horrible debt. I've made horrible, horrible financial choices, but I wouldn't be where I was if I didn't have that sort of like risk. I come from risk takers and I'm a gambling person. I'm like, well, I need to look good. So I'm going to go buy a new outfit for this shoot tomorrow. And nobody can say anything about it. Like, you know, so I think I thrive on the big risk, the big reward.
Yeah.
And I failed many times, and that's very, very painful. But it's all worth it when you have one good thing happen.
But are you still in debt?
Oh, no. I'm not in debt anymore, thank God. Mm. I don't want to ever get back to that. That's my goal.
I hope you succeed with that. When did you first set foot on stage?
A real stage? I mean, school stages, you know, school plays and talent shows and things like that. But in church, I would get up and do anything I could. I would like, I'm going to write a poem about Jesus. Mm-hmm. Just anything I could do to be in front of a crowd of people with a microphone was like just a magnet. I'm like, well, is there a microphone in here? Well, I need that. But I didn't really do a big adult stage until I moved to New York City probably and did a show. It took a long time to get the bravery to get up on a stage in New York City by myself. And I was working in my day job. It was a very boring financial job with lots of spreadsheets and numbers and math. And I wrote two songs. One was about my cubicle that I worked in, and one was about Excel spreadsheets. And I got up and I performed them, and I was so scared. I had dance moves planned. Like, I had a CD track playing, and they were, like, dramatic songs. They were, like, power ballads about these things, like, painful. Like, it was, and that was part of the comedy of it.
Did you write the music yourself?
Yes, I wrote the music. I had a keyboard, and then I transferred that track to a CD because I can't play an instrument and sing at the same time. I get too nervous. So I had the track playing, and I had little dance moves planned, and I was so nervous that I was like shaking and my knees were buckling. So I had to hold on to the microphone stand to just keep myself up. And I did it and it went really well. And I was like, yes, you know, this is what I want to do with my life. You know, I don't even do musical comedy anymore at all, but that's what I was doing in the very beginning. And it helped because I didn't know how to I was too scared to just talk on stage.
Did you ever get to use the moves?
No, I ended up realizing it was funnier if I was very serious about it. It was like a love-hate song about my cubicle. And then the Excel one was like a spoken word jazz piece. I mean, it was very, I think back and it was like, that was funny.
Yeah.
Those held up.
Because you made a show of your own in New York somewhere, right?
Yes, I did a little, after a while of just performing, and I would host little shows here and there. I found that I was good at hosting because I didn't have to do as much actual comedy, but I could be on stage and get comfortable with that. And I started doing a show called Sarah Schaefer is Obsessed with You, which was like my own little talk show. But I did it. We had a cubicle on stage and it was like I was at work. That was the premise of it. I was at work doing a talk show. We had a little copy machine on the stage. And like, it was cute. I mean, I'm like, couple of years ago, I went back and watched some video. I have video, tons of video of it.
Okay.
And it made me cringe because I was like, oh, I wasn't as funny as I thought I was, but you could see the sparkle in there. You could see the drive and the passion and the creativity, and it makes me smile.
Fantastic. You have a great joke about tattoos on your album. Did you ever get a second one?
Yeah, I
did. You did? Okay.
Yeah. So my original tattoo is a butterfly tramp stamp.
Yeah, that has to do with Jesus. You have to listen to that if you haven't
heard it. Listen to it. I explain the origins of that tattoo, and then I joke about how I didn't realize I was getting the most cliche tattoo, like the symbol of sluttiness. Like, I mean, it's a joke. Like, I don't actually believe that, but when I was in college and when I heard the phrase tramp stamp, I was horrified that I had one because I didn't think that what I had done was trampy at all. And so my joke is that my second tattoo is quotation marks around the butterfly tramp stamp. So now it's ironic and it's a joke and I was kidding. And I did get the quotation marks.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I'm not going to show it. It is a podcast, I know, so you guys can't see it.
No.
But
that's okay. Your two podcasts, are they canceled or are they on hiatus?
So I had a podcast with Nikki Glaser, You Had to Be There. That is sort of like dormant. I don't know. I'm sure we'll do something again someday, but we're just, she's busy on, she has a new show coming out on Comedy Central, which I'm sure is going to be amazing. And I'm busy on my stuff. And, you know, we just, part of it too, I think, is we talked about our lives so openly for so long. And by the end, we were like, we don't have anything left. We should probably wait and let some life experience build up. And I also felt, kind of went through something where I'm like, I'm done oversharing for a little while. And like, done telling everybody every single thing about my life. So it's been a good time to just kind of keep things to myself for a little while. But the other one was the whole other, it was just a completely improvised podcast where everything that me and my guests say is a lie. So it's everything is made up. It's the opposite of oversharing.
It was really funny.
Thank you. Yeah.
Where did you record it?
That was with WNYC. So I did some of it in New York and some of it in LA. WNYC is the big New York public radio station. And we are currently figuring out what to do with it next. I'm developing another show for them, a different type of show. So I think we might either put lies on the back burner or redo. I don't know what. Well, it's not over, is what I.
Stuff is happening around you, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you like to recommend something?
Gosh, I feel like I've seen so many. There's just so many great comedians. I will recommend Tig Notaro, who I know isn't an original recommendation, but her documentary on Netflix called Tig is so mind-blowing. And I've only met her a couple times, and she just truly is like one of my favorite comedians. And I just love everything about her, and to see what her life, like for her to be open about her life in that way. And that documentary is just very inspiring. And she has a new special coming out, which I can't wait to see.
And listener, if you want to, there's an episode of my podcast with Tig Notaro.
Yes.
Back or something like that.
Yeah, I wish I could recommend something secret. And I'm sure I'm going to leave here and think of 18 things right away. But yeah,
my brain
is dead.
Who do you think I should interview?
There's a really funny comedian, Rory Scovel.
Yeah.
He is amazing. And he's one of my best friends. He did my lies. Rory is just one of the, he's someone who just has that raw talent that you wish you had even like a thimble full of it. Oh, and Kate Berlant. That's someone I would recommend. I should have recommended her.
But that's fantastic. Thank you so much for your time.
It's been
fantastic.
Thank you.
Sarah Schaefer. Oh, I liked her so much. And you can follow her on Twitter. Her name is Sarah Schaefer 1. And in this exact moment, when the Clinton-Trump race is climaxing, Sarah is extremely interesting to follow and funny. So please do that. And you can also follow VarvetPod on both Twitter and Instagram. This episode was edited by Lovisa Olsson, and technical as well as editorial help came from the great Thomas Kulshage. My LA crew was 16 Mile Talent, and that's all for today.
I'm Christopher Triumph saying thank you very much for listening. Bye bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.